TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Okay, go!
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets. A division of Bell Media. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for joining us. The voice may sound unfamiliar. I meant unfamiliar. I'm Matt Leibel. You may hear me in the mornings of the big show on Jane Westwood on TSN 1290. Filling in today along with Michael Remus and Dave Minuk. We call ourselves the Illegal Curve Hockey Show B Team. We'll get to that in a minute. Where are the regular guys, you ask? Well, the one and only Drew Mandel has finally taken the plunge and agreed to get married. Twisted his arm. And so he and the boys are off doing on assignment, doing a little recon for us in the great state of New York. And I guess today in New Jersey.
The Garden State.
The Garden State. Very good, Dave.
Thank you.
Drew, Richard, and Ezra are in New Jersey tonight for the Jets-Devils game. As we mentioned, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290. That Jets-Devils game starts at 6 o'clock. We've got coverage all the way up until that puck drop at 6. So Drew, Richard, and Ezra are in New Jersey tonight. They were at the Islanders game, Jets-Islanders game on Thursday. They'll be at the Rangers game tomorrow. They're calling this Drew's bachelor party, so we're hoping they make it back okay.
I believe they're calling it Drew York City.
Drew York. Or there's hashtag ICDoesNYC on Twitter. You know, if you want to follow IC Drew, he's posting pictures all over. You can see the picture of his bill from last night's meal. That's, you know, really exciting.
What was the bill on the last night's meal? To give it away. Come on.
It was like $2,000.
Oh, my God. Well, there are 15 of them.
Yeah, it's not like that was three people.
So there's a crew down there. They're having a great time. We might even try and wake them up this morning, give them a call and catch up with them and find out their thoughts on the Islander game and what they're looking forward to the Devils tonight. Again, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day, TSN 1290. That puck drop Jets-Devils is tonight at 6 o'clock. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Even though it may not be the voices you are used to, we promise you that just like the Jets this year started off with their second line, maybe not being the focal point of the team. Everyone was expecting the first line to carry the team. In fact, the second line has carried the team all season long, especially now with Kane on there. Kane, Burmistrov, Antropov. I don't think anyone would argue that line is a stronger line for the Jets, nor would anyone argue that this line is a stronger line for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, you know, me and Dave were talking about this exact same thing when we met for breakfast this morning. You know, the line one, you know, it's line one by name, but by production line two. So I said, you know, Dave can be Antropov, I'll be the young Burmistrov, and you can be Kane.
I almost would rather take on the role of the veteran leadership of Antropov and let Dave steal the show as our advantage. But we can see how the show plays out. You can follow us, website www.illegalcurve.com. Tweet at us throughout the show, at Illegal Curve, or if you want to talk to us individually, at M Remus, M-R-E-M-I-S, at IC Dave, or at Matt Leibel, L-E-I-B-L. So, guys, where do you want to start with today? Should we look ahead to the game, or should we kind of recap what happened maybe last night in hockey?
You know, there's a lot of news last night, a lot of high-scoring games, you know, similar to last week's game, the Jets and the Flyers. Tampa and Chicago had a thriller where Tampa came back and Stamkos scored a hat trick in one period, and Tampa, you know, took that game in overtime. You know, a nice matchup between two teams who could be contending for the Stanley Cup final.
Final score in that one was 6-5 Tampa, was it not?
I think it was 5-4.
5-4 Tampa there. So Stamkos with a hat trick. You guys like that third goal with about 30 seconds left in the second period? Just a slapper. Great pass over there. Unbelievable, unbelievable goal by Stamkos.
Yeah, no, it was. But actually, my game highlight was the Colorado-Dallas game. And even though they
7-6
lost 7-6
for Dallas.
Overtime for Dallas.
Dallas 9-3, by the way.
Two extremely surprising teams. Nobody expecting either of them to do anything substantial. But the goal by Duchesne,
where he basically went around 18 guys.
Well, he split the defense, and there were three defenders. He split the three guys and then scored a beauty. It was just an unbelievable goal. And it was an unbelievable game. I mean, it was back and forth the entire night. And again, you know, it's always, coaches hate it, but the fans love, you're not going to want to see a 7-6 game every single game. But the occasional high-scoring affair is always fun for the fans because, like, I've been at games where, I remember I was at a live Wings-Ducks game. And it was a fairly low-scoring affair through the first two periods, and then all of a sudden the third period erupted. And I think the final score was 7-3 or 7-4, and it was just back and forth to that third period. And it was unbelievable. And as a fan, you can sit back and enjoy watching, you know, the goalies get scored on, the players stepping it up and playing it, especially the skill players.
Tough to be on the losing end of those games, but I think anyone who watched that Jets-Flyers game last Thursday night would agree, when your team wins, a 9-8 game often is more enjoyable than a 1-0 game, but it's fabulous, fabulous.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that everybody talked about that Philly game. They're like, oh, the Jets blew 2 4-goal leads. Well, it wasn't like they blew a 4-0 and then an 8-4 lead, but they blew, you know, a 5-1, 6-2 lead. The game was fantastic. I mean, you know, you felt like we were watching it. You felt like it was the Jets. It was slipping away the entire time. Like, you're watching and you're like, this is going to happen. You know, the Jets 1.0 flashbacks are happening.
Of course.
Like, the team's got a lead. They're going to inevitably lose. And, of course, they, you know, slowly mounted the comeback and won the game, you know, and it was a great game. But,
sorry, back to that Colorado-Dallas game, you know, Matt Duchene was on the losing end of that game. And actually, after, he said it was one of the most fun games that he's ever played. So, you know, those games are fun for everyone. It feels like, you know, it takes you back. Some of the guys from the Jets said they were playing in beer league. But, you know, a few notes from that game. You know, being the Rain Man of baseball, Matt, you'd appreciate this. Ian Kinsler dropped the puck at the start of the game.
Last night.
To start the game. And another note, Sheldon Surrey scored his 100th career goal. So welcome back to the NHL this season, Sheldon Surrey, who's picking up big minutes for the Stars.
The Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, Michael Remus in with you. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. Jets Devils tonight at 6 o'clock.
The other notable puck drop was, of course, by Tony La Russa and I think Freeze and
Carpenter.
And Chris Carpenter.
Carpenter actually got to skate and play with the team in practice the other day, earlier this week,
yeah,
with the Blues. Is that not true? Did I see that?
Yeah, I think
maybe
right.
I had the TV on. I was had to adjust the brightness. I see Carpenter in skates.
I heard
skates.
That, but I didn't, you know, it doesn't surprise me because I read a story about him earlier about that sort of, that he was very interested in hockey and stuff like that.
Well, he's from New Hampshire. Like, he grew up right. in a cold in the winter, and he's used to playing hockey and all that stuff. Very nice, but you're right.
And, of course, Blue Jay, you know, so he got exposed to the hockey.
Yeah.
But the point is that the crowd reaction was good because, of course, they see the World Series trophies in the building, and they're dropping the puck. And I think Freeze also was a big St. Louis Blues fan.
Well, of course, grew up in St. Louis.
That's right. But,
45th straight shutout in St. Louis. Sellout, excuse me.
Yeah,
45th
oh, really?
Straight sellout in St. Louis. Well, so it was once called the Kiel Center. What are they calling it now?
Scott's Trade Center?
Yeah.
That's my guess.
I remember the bygone days in the early 90s when we were kids and they used to have like actual names. But we can get to that another time.
I think they've had some, you know, since Jod Davidson has stepped in as president a few years ago, they've really turned them around. And it was back to the World Series that David Perron tweeted, a DP_57, tweeted a nice picture of him and Tony La Russa and the World Series trophy. So, you know, it's good to see those players from different sports getting together and talking and having a good time.
Speaking of that St. Louis game, Canucks are not looking so good, guys. 6-7-1. The Canucks have 7 losses, the most in the Western Conference. When you consider that the Jets are 5-6-1, the Canucks went to the Cup. I mean, obviously everyone's seen how the Bruins are struggling this year. It's kind of been a weird first month of the season. We can talk about that. But in that specifically that game last night, Luongo letting in soft goals again. What is going on with Luongo? The Canucks lose 3-2 to the Blues, and all 3 Blues goals, you could argue, were garbage goals.
You know, some people might call it a Stanley Cup hangover. You know, they played till late June. Luongo's been a notorious slow starter, and the fans are calling him out. I don't know. Maybe it could be getting to him. You never know. And I think last night, you know, the Canucks, Alain Vigneault knows they're in trouble. They juggled the lines. I think they tried multiple D pairings and juggled around the forwards. And they lost 5-1 to Minnesota earlier in the week where they just looked absolutely awful.
And Schneider was in net for that one.
45 shots, though. Schneider made 40 saves in the loss.
Right.
But Minnesota, who I think no one scored fewer goals than Minnesota, I think, in the entire league. And they put up 5 on the Canucks. So we can check on that. But, I mean, at least in the West, I think Minnesota, they're just not shooting. They're not scoring at all, even with some of their firepower with Setoguchi and Heatley and these guys. And they just lit up the Canucks. Canucks are just...
Detroit and Anaheim have scored fewer goals.
Fewer goals.
Yeah.
Well, was that before the 5 goals that Minnesota put up, though? 5 goals could sway you over the top.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's who knows. And just another notable from that game, I believe Alex Burrows left the game with back spasms. So that last night's game. So he's a big part of their power play and penalty kill. So we'll see what happens for them going forward.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. Jets and Devils. Puck drop tonight at 6. Your co-host today with myself, Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, Michael Remus. The boys are in New Jersey for tonight's game. We will catch up with them. We're just unpacking some of the highlights from last night. How about that game, guys? The all-Canadian matchup, Montreal and Ottawa. Carey Price with a number of highlight reel saves in that one. Montreal, they've really turned it around after a slow start, huh?
You know, you wouldn't think that firing the assistant coach would light a spark under them, but apparently it has, and they've drastically improved their play since then and hope to, you know, make a surge for the playoffs.
Well, they've won four games in a row. They're playing. They've got their forwards suddenly scoring again. They're playing well. They're playing consistent. So I agree with Remus. Like, I'm surprised that, you know, the firing of assistant coach, I don't think that would have had such a drastic impact on the team. Maybe really, you know, the truth is that you can't fire an entire team. So there always has to be one guy who's the fall guy. And so, you know, in this instance, it was the assistant coach. But, you know, and then I think what that does is it forces the players to say, you know what, they need to take stock and realize that they have to pick it up because, you know, soon if they, you know, while you can't fire a team, you can trade a lot of members. So, I mean, that's what happened. The team probably had a meeting and said, we need to get together and start playing well. And as a result, they've won four in a row, and they're climbing back into the into contention.
Final score in that one last night, guys, was?
2-1.
2-1 for Montreal. Yeah. Over Price almost had the shutout there. A tough goal. A shorthanded goal, actually, as a power play was expiring there for Ottawa. Ottawa, actually, we can talk about them a little bit. They rebounded well after their brutal start after Paul MacLean had to close their conference. Your other games, Washington-Carolina. Washington still, like, firing at all cylinders, even with all the Ovechkin trouble kind of this week with being benched at the end of that game against Minnesota. But Ovechkin, two assists last night, no goals. What did Washington win, 5-1? Was that the final score in that one?
5-1.
Yeah, over Carolina.
And notable Winnipegger Cody Eakin with his first goal and assist. Beautiful shot he had. He was on a 2-on-1 with Alexander Semin, who passed it to him. Kind of walked in, looked off the defender, and just snapped one by Cam Ward. And Cam Ward is a top NHL goaltender, so, you know, the young kid, Cody Eakin, shows that he's got a release with the best of him in the NHL.
And his assist on the other goal, I can't remember who got that goal, but it was also a very, very pretty pass there. Eakin had a great game. He only got called up a couple days ago.
And he's actually not slated to play tonight. So, you know, you score your first goal and then get rewarded by sitting on the pine the next game. So I think they just have a logjam of forwards there in Washington, you know, one of the top teams of the league. You know, they got a lot of talent up there.
Washington, it's like the similar story. Ovechkin off to a bit of a slow start, but the team is just absolutely flying. Everyone, of course, going to wait to see when, not if, but when they collapse. Finally, last game, Calgary and Buffalo. Sabres take that one. Robin Regier facing his old team. Plays the last minute and 10. Enroth gets the start because Ryan Miller had a brutal game against the Flyers the other day. So you got the Sabres beating the Flames. I think the score in that one was 2-1 as well, if I'm not mistaken. The Flames, not off to such a great start either. We'll talk more about these games. We're going to throw it to break. You are listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, Michael Remus in for the boys. Chevrolet, Birchwood, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, Game Day, Jets and Devils. The game is tonight at 6. If you want to listen to TSN 1290 all day, we've got in-depth hockey and Jets coverage leading up to that puck drop at 6. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back. Welcome back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Birchwood, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, Game Day. With the Jets taking on the New Jersey Devils tonight in the Garden State with a puck drop at 6. In-depth Jets coverage all day long leading up to the puck drop at 6 here. You are listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. In case you are just joining us wondering where Drew Richard and Ezra are, they are on assignment. They'll be at the Devils game tonight. They were at the Islanders game, Jets-Islanders, of course, Thursday. They'll be at the Rangers doing a little New York, New Jersey reconnaissance mission trip for us. No drinking involved. They've been very sober. They're taking lots of notes, lots of clips. They'll come back, hopefully all in one piece. So you are here, myself, Matt Leibel, hosting today along with Michael Remus. He's out from under the R desk where they usually trap him. And Dave Minuk, you know him from the morning papers and all the things that he does online. Of course, you can follow us online, www.illegalcurve.com. And throughout the show, we welcome all tweets. Tweet at us, at Illegal Curve, or individually at M. Remus, at IC Dave, or myself at Matt Leibel, though I don't have a computer and any Twitter followers either. So don't do that. There's a segment that we've got right now brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. Guys, in this segment, we're going to talk about the Jets-Panthers game, which was Monday night in Sunrise, Florida. Of course, the Jets won 4-3 in a shootout. Just to refresh everyone's memory, it was looking like the same old for the Jets, a 2-0 lead that they let slip away, 3-2 going into the final minute, and then a great, great effort by both Kyle Wellwood and Evander Kane. Great, hand-eye coordination. Kane sticking it in out of midair, swatting it in. Looked like they had to review it. Was it a goal? Was it no goal? They rule it. It's a goal. Sends the game to overtime. Solves nothing in a shootout. The Jets win. Andrew Ladd and Kyle Wellwood score in the shootout. Andre Pavlik had a pretty good game. Of course, also in that game, it's become infamous now. Skilly's hit on Toby Enstrom that knocked Enstrom out of the game. He did not return. And as we've learned today, the Jets, I mean, this is just a matter of fact, putting Enstrom on injured reserve. What are they calling it?
Broken collarbone. Yeah.
So timetable on that can vary, 4 to 6 weeks.
6 weeks. What I've been told is it's a minimum 6 weeks for healing.
Okay.
And then who knows how long the recovery will take, probably a couple more weeks after that. So you're looking probably, a lot of people are saying, you know, probably in the new year, like January.
As a result of that Enstrom hit, there was no action taken by the league. The league didn't even review it. I think this is maybe a bit contentious, depending on who you talk to. Some people thought it was a clean hit. Some people thought that there was maybe a little bit of malice there. In the end, the league did not review it. No suspension, no penalty on the play. The only result, Enstrom knocked out of the lineup for at least 6 weeks. And the Jets making moves, bringing up Mark Flood and Brett Festerling, defenseman from St. John's. And then just today, they've also called up Paul Postma. So people who are a little bit maybe surprised or disappointed that Postma didn't get the call when Flood and Festerling did, he is up too, because the Jets' D-line, not just Enstrom, but Stewart is banged up, and Randy Jones blocking a puck in the other game that we'll talk about. But the D-line, in spite of all that, they were able to win the other game the other night in Long Island, and hopefully they will do the same today in New Jersey. But we are talking about Monday's game, Florida, Jets-Panthers. Jets win it 4-3 in a shootout. Where do you guys want to go with this? You want to talk about this Enstrom hit, the play of Kane? Where should we start?
The Kane goal was fantastic.
Just the last goal.
The tying goal with 49.9 seconds to go in the game. I thought for sure the game was over. I was channeling my inner Jets 1.0, and the entire time I thought, well, here we go again, because I think Fleischmann scored with about 2 minutes to go in the game or something like that. And
on a power play, another case of the Jets taking a bad penalty late in the game, late in a period that resulted in an opposition goal.
Yeah, and so there's 2 minutes to go. There is no chance the Jets are coming back. I was already writing my game report as if the Jets had already lost the game. And I was just like, you know what, this is unfortunate, but, you know, this is what happens, right? And then all of a sudden, Kane scored. And I actually thought I didn't think Kane hit the puck with a high stick, but I thought Wellwood had.
And I was wondering, does that negate the goal?
Well, it should have, because what happens is that the next player touches it is a Jet. Had it been obviously a Panther who touched it, then it would have been okay.
And if I understand correctly, sorry, Dave, the ruling on the ice was goal, and then the video review said inconclusive, that's why they couldn't overturn it?
No, that's not the case? No, the ref waved it off immediately. The ref said no goal.
But then the line judge said it was a goal. Was there not some disagreement between the referees?
One ref called it no goal, and then maybe the three others said it was a goal?
Because what I'd understood, we couldn't make out what the ref said in his brief explanation after, but it was inconclusive, the video review, so they had to let the ruling on the ice stand. And I think that the ref who was behind the net
waved it off immediately, said no goal, high stick. And then they had a conference right after that, and you're right, Remus, I believe what happened was they said we think it was fine. They went to a video review, And then, you know, it was obviously declared a good goal. So.
Because they could not overturn that ruling that it was a goal. It's a little bit complicated, but I think it's one of those situations. Because if you keep looking at that replay, different angles made it look...
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Some angles it looked like Kane had a high stick above the crossbar. Others it looked like he was well below.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, it's always tough. But, you know, the reality is I think they got the right call.
You listen to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Jets Devils tonight at 6 o'clock. The Legal Curve, Matt Leibel, Dave Manuk, Michael Remus.
You know, the one thing about that goal was I was personally, when you're watching it on TV, you only see the one ref going, no goal, no goal. So I was under the impression that this wasn't a goal. And I really think that the Jets must have had someone, you know, in Toronto reviewing the goal, smiling down on them, saying, hey, these guys haven't had much of a break all year. We've had a few calls, you know, go the other way. And you know what? It was a close call, and they just gave it to us. So, we'll take it, and we'll take the W.
Of course. I mean, it's great to have the bounces go your way. Earlier, just last week, we had bounces, pucks going in off Bogosian's skate into the net to cost us a game, things like that. Matt Cook running, I mean, this is a couple weeks ago, ramming into Pavlik, and that leads to a Penguins goal. Of course, we won that game, but breaks not going the Jets' way, so Remus, you're absolutely right. Of course, we're talking about Evander Kane's game-tying goal with something like 49 seconds left in that game. That sent it to overtime and eventually the shootout where the Jets won 4-3. Kane, of course, scored earlier in the game, too, as did Wellwood, who ended up with the shootout winner. It was a great game for both Wellwood and Kane. And really, Kane's kind of coming out party in a way. Since then, he had a great game Thursday night as well, where he continues to just lead the team. He's got something like five goals on the season, four goals in the last two games. Is that right?
I think it's four in the last two, maybe five in the last six.
He and Wellwood are tied for the lead.
That's right. Yeah. And Kane, of course, has done just excellently well ever since they moved him up onto that, for whatever you want to call it, the second line. Maybe it's now the top line with Burmistrov and Antropov. How do you guys feel about the play of Evander Kane lately?
You know, I think since he moved to that line, it was in the Ranger game, and he's gotten considerably more ice time. If you look at his ice time, you know, the first five games and last five games, it's gone up about, you know, average a few minutes per game. But he's looked like a different player. You know, he's really showing his speed and his strength. He looks like a power forward. He's the one guy on the team that can dangle. He showed moves in the Islander game and the Panthers game. He's got a quick shot, really quick release, which completely surprised Theodore on that first goal. He didn't even see that coming. And then you saw him try and freeze DiPietro, but obviously beat the goalie, but as they say, couldn't beat the post.
You were talking about the Islanders game with his penalty shot in that first period. Yeah. Dave, what have you seen from Kane that you've liked or...
Well, I mean, it's a couple things. You know, I mean, the fact is that he's hustle. His hustle out there has been fantastic. And Remus is right. Like, he is the guy who can dangle, and he's the guy who's got the speed. He's got the size. He's pretty much got everything. The Jets needed him to be going because he's the future of this team. He's the future star of this team. And so, you know, it's not rocket science. I mean, they gave him, as Remus said, they gave him more ice time, and they gave him better line mates. Wow, he's producing. I mean, I'm not surprised that his game has improved because now he's got guys who can pass him the puck properly and he can go with it. But, I mean, he's digging in the corners. He's playing a little bit more of a gritty style game. I mean, if you look, I mean, we're jumping ahead now to the Islanders game, but, I mean, the goal was all individual effort. I mean, he was up against, like, two or three Islanders defenders, and he basically did all the work himself. So I'm liking the way his game is. I mean, obviously, the Jets brass saw something that they didn't like early on and basically sent a message to him. They said, look, we're not going to play you a lot. You're not going to play with the number one or number two line. You're going to start here playing with the third line, and you're not going to play a lot of minutes unless you follow our system. And we don't know what that is. We don't know whether that's because of off-ice issues or on-ice issues because they saw something they didn't like. But the reality is there's obviously some message because when you have a guy who's of Kane's talent level playing those kind of minutes and on that kind of with those kind of teammates or line mates, I should say, clearly, they're sending a message. And I think the message got through. And they said, look, you need to improve. And we've seen over the last few games, his numbers have gone up.
Of course, there were a number of Jets struggling early on in the Montreal game when they went to Phoenix, their first couple of games on the road. But, yeah, it's true. Coach Noel, whoever was with it, was deciding to make an example out of Kane. He was getting a lot of the heat in the press for getting fewer minutes on the ice. And I think he's definitely responded just a few weeks later. There's no question about that. The last thing we want to touch on in this game, that Enstrom hit. What it means to have Enstrom out of the lineup. First of all, what did you guys think of the hit, quickly? Anything wrong?
You know, I don't know. It looked like it was a shoulder-to-shoulder hit. You know, it's tough to say because Enstrom, he's not a tall guy. I'm pretty sure he's about my height, between 5'9 and 5'11. And it was
it's quite the range you're giving yourself there, Remus. But anyway, go on, yes.
I don't know. It looks like a shoulder, you know, to shoulder. And it was a violent hit, so maybe it made it look a bit worse than it was. I can see why. You know, you'd want to be upset, maybe call for a suspension. You know, Enstrom he logs the most minutes of anyone. He's a top defenseman. He plays in all situations. He's, you know, the guy who held the defense together. You know, he plays with Byfuglien, you know, keeps him in line a little.
Gives Byfuglien kind of the rein to be a little more aggressive because, you know, Enstrom will be at the back there. Blocks a lot of shots as well. Power play, penalty, like you said, yes, go on.
Right. You know, as strict as they've been on suspensions, I mean, it's kind of understandable that they would... And I think, you know, they really took into consideration, obviously, Skilly's history. And I think they took into consideration the fact that Byfuglien went after Skilly right after. And that Ladd fought him after that as well. And maybe that, you know, instead of giving him a game, you know, you just have to fight Andrew Ladd.
What do you think? And your thoughts on the hit there?
I actually didn't think it was bad. I thought that Enstrom was low. I didn't think Skilly tried to purposely. I think he was just checking him. I mean, you know, he was going for a check, and Enstrom went low. And I think if it was Byfuglien, I mean, I think Skilly would have bounced off of him. But I mean, I think it's still, you know, because Remus is right, because he's a smaller guy. You saw that the hit had a much more significant impact. But I mean, I really didn't think that there was any sort of malicious intent.
The hit itself probably not a dirty play. Unfortunately, one of those situations where it's going to probably. And it has ended in an injury. Enstrom with a broken collarbone. left the team before the game Thursday in Long Island, back in Winnipeg, met with doctors, got a broken collarbone, and they're saying at least 6 weeks. And then, of course, there'll be the recovery time, getting him back on ice. The Jets' blue line is depleted. As a result, they've made three call-ups from St. John's before the Islanders game, Festerling, Brett Festerling, and Mark Flood. And now, of course, they've also picked up Paul Postma. We might see him tonight. We'll have to talk about that Jets-Devils game coming up in a little bit. You are listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matt Leibel, Michael Remus, and Dave Minuk filling in for the guys who are on assignment. They'll be at the Devils game tonight. But if you're like us and you're in Winnipeg, you should be listening here on TSN 1290. The puck drops at 6. We've got coverage leading up to that puck drop. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. We'll be back with more great hockey talk and Jets talk on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matt Leibel, Michael Remus, and Dave Minuk in for the guys who are on location at that Jets-Devils game. Tonight, puck dropped 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290, as you heard, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Just wanted to mention that last segment where we dissected the Panthers-Jets game for Monday night was brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. Mentioned we're going to talk Jets-Devils right now, and we are joined on the phone on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with the Devils play-by-play man, Matt Lachlan for WFAN in New Jersey. Matt, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. It's a pleasure to be on. Thanks for asking.
Well, we want to jump right into it, Matt. We're very pleased that you're joining us. Of course, one of the big storylines for the Devils heading into tonight's game, Ilya Kovalchuk. Not sure if he's going to play. Can you give us an update on his status?
Yeah, he is out tonight. He did try to give it a go during the morning skate. He came out once, left. We thought, all right, that's it. But he did come back and try again, but in the end, the injury just prevented him from giving a full effort. So they are taking a precautionary approach. Pete DeBoer did not think it was anything that would be long-term. The fact that Ilya was able to at least get out there and believe that there might be a possibility of playing, they take as a good sign. Kovalchuk felt himself that it might only be a couple of days. And so we don't play again until Tuesday. A reasonably light week, so I think they just decided that precaution was the smart way to go. So he will not be in the lineup tonight, so the Devils have to shuffle their lines around a little bit, and we'll see what results take place.
Matt, how do you think that fourth overall pick Adam Larson has fared with his short stint in the NHL?
Yeah, he's been very good. It has been a steep learning curve because he leads all Devils defensemen in ice time, all rookies in the NHL in ice time. They put him in practically every circumstance. He will not play much on the penalty kill, but he's there late in the games, etc. And so it's been a big step up for him. He's only 18. He won't turn 19 until a little over from now. So there's been a lot for him to learn, a lot put on his plate, and he's handled it well. The one thing right now that's missing from his game is offense. If you look at his numbers in the Swedish Elite League, there wasn't a lot of offense there either. However, he wasn't given a prime role necessarily, so I don't know if you can say that he'll never have an offensive component to his game, but he's got an 18-year-old shot, if you know what I mean. He's got to work on that a little bit, but they love everything else that he brings to the table.
You know, Matt, in the last few years under Jacques Lemaire, the Devils were known as a defensive team. You know, how has their defensive play been this season under Peter DeBoer?
Yeah, it's been okay. There have been games like the other night against Toronto where it was a little bit of firework hockey, breakdowns on the defensive side and assignments, backdoor plays have plagued the Devils a little bit this year. So it's not as tight as it once was, but if you give up something, you hope to get something back. And while it hasn't shown completely yet in their offensive totals, anyone who sees the game or listens to the game tonight will find a Devils team that is much more offensively oriented. They will push things. They'll press the attack. The D will be in deep. You'll find guys that you would never expect to be behind the net. On occasion, behind the net as they pinch in and go in deep, and I'm talking about someone like an Anton Bolchenkov who really has very little offensive component to this game. So they're not afraid of pushing the envelope a little bit. And so that results in some defensive breakdowns. But overall, it's an improvement because it is a more exciting brand of hockey, and it probably plays a little bit more to how the league is this year, obviously, or not just this year, but now since the lockout, and the way Pete DeBoer wants to play. So that's his imprint, without question.
It's the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Matt Leibel, Michael Remus, Dave Minuk with you. We are talking on the phone with New Jersey Devils play-by-play man Matt Lachlan as we preview tonight's Jets-Devils game, 6 o'clock puck drop, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290. Matt, a lot of people, a lot of our listeners don't know much about Peter DeBoer, the first-year head coach for the Devils. Tell us a bit about his coaching style.
He is calm, cool, and collected. There's a little bit of a fire there, but he's not the kind of coach who, if you have one bad shift, is going to nail you to the bench. However, he does reward performance, like all good coaches will, but he gives you a chance. He understands it's a game played by humans, and the other team is trying too, and that's going to lead to some mistakes. So the team does like playing for him. He's organized. He is aggressive in his approach, as I said. He's up-tempo. So far, it's a group that collectively likes to play for him. As you know, you're always judged by wins and losses, so if there are more wins, it's great. If there are more losses, then there'll be some grumblings, of course, but right now it's been pretty good. He lacked a little bit of a physical edge. The one thing that's disappointed him thus far about the team is that they have been inconsistent. And when I say a physical edge, I don't necessarily mean they're going to be dropping the gloves. I mean, those days are long gone. But compete hard for the puck. Where the Devils have been inconsistent is they've lost some individual battles, as they did Wednesday against Toronto, where if they had any kind of effort, they would have won that game. But the effort just wasn't there. And that puzzles him a little bit. The team understands it. It's just a matter of getting that performance night in and night out. Now, they had it on Thursday night against Philadelphia, and it was a terrific performance. And so you do wonder why it's there one night and not the other. And if that can be straightened out, it certainly bodes well. But that's the thing that's disappointing them a little bit about the club, the inconsistency in those physical battles, the one-on-one battles in the corner, grabbing loose pucks, driving to the net. He wants to see more of that.
So, Matt, the last time a team from Winnipeg played an NHL game in New Jersey was December 29th, 1995, a game the Jets won 5-3. Not surprisingly, Martin Brodeur was in net, so he's obviously logged a lot of minutes on his body over the years. Do you still see him as the number one goalie in New Jersey?
Right now he is the number one goalie in New Jersey. I mean, he hasn't played as much because of injuries, but it's not nearly as clear-cut as it once was. And he acknowledges it. I mean, after all, the birth certificate indicates he was born in 1972, so he's 39 years old, of age. He'll be 40 in May. So, yeah, father time is catching up with him. He knows that. Hedberg is a very good backup. The Devils are not reluctant in any way, shape, or form to call on him. So Marty would still be the number one, and if he remains healthy, he will see more time. But unlike past years where the numbers would be Brodeur 77 games, backup 5, it could be 50, 32, it could be 48, 34, something like that. It'll be much more even than it's ever been in a healthy season for Marty Brodeur. And again, he's fine with it. He gets it. He knows where his place in history is. He also knows where he's at chronologically. And he's been more than willing to let the coach make the decision that he feels is best.
You know, moving to the forwards, Zach Parise is an unrestricted free agent after the season. You know, has been any progress been made with contract talks with him?
None that we're aware of, and none that Zach will admit to. So I take him at his word. The Devils have traditionally not done a lot of negotiation during a season. Marty Brodeur a few years ago did sign a contract extension, so it has happened. There is precedence. But for the most part, Lou Lamoriello has stayed clear of that. The danger, of course, there is that with a player of Zach's talent, you don't necessarily give yourself a big window to sign him before he hits free agency. And what we've seen in the past is most players at least want to get a taste of what that's like, to see what other suitors are out there. So I would not be surprised if there are some quiet talks, but if there are, they have been very quiet and denied on both sides. The Devils would like to sign him. There's no question about that. And Zach likes it here. Any player who's grown up in an organization certainly appreciates it. He likes, you know, what living in the metropolitan New York area can bring for a young guy. He likes, with the exception of last year, the success the Devils have had. But I think he does want to see what is the plan moving forward. This is a team in transition. If I'm going to hitch my wagon to this train, where is it going? Because he wants to win. And so there might still be a little bit of a wait and see on his part.
It's the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, Michael Remus. your host. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day with the Jets taking on the Devils tonight at 6 in New Jersey. And our guest is Devils play-by-play man Matt Lachlan. Matt, a lot of Winnipeggers know fellow Winnipegger Travis Zajac. Hasn't played yet this year for the Devils. Been injured. When can we expect to see him back in the lineup?
Well, first off, a huge loss for the team. They were not deep at center to begin with. And when Travis went down with the Achilles injury during off-season workouts, it really put the Devils in a bind. It forced them to push a young kid by the name of Jacob Josephson into a higher position than he probably was ready to handle at the age of 20. And then he winds up suffering a broken collarbone about 2 weeks ago, and he's gone for 3 to 4 months. And so the center situation has really been affected by those injuries. Good news from the Devils' standpoint, though, is that Travis was back in town. He spent most of his rehab time in Winnipeg, and as hometown kid, I can't blame him. Plus, the doctor who performed the surgery is there, so he wants to stay close to him. But he did come back to New Jersey this week. He did skate. So the good news is he's back on his skates. He has begun the process. Pete this morning said that it looks like around Christmas they might have him back, give or take a week or two, depending on his progress. So there is some light at the end of the tunnel, and he will add immensely to the club when he comes back because he's just a terrific player. Can throw in some offense, but responsible, good on face-off. Devils certainly miss him, and it'll be a good day when he comes back.
Matt, you touched on it with your last answer a little bit, but the Devils addressing a number of younger players this year. How have Adam Henrique and the other youngsters done this season?
Adam Henrique has really come on. He's been a bit of a surprise, not so much that he hasn't had a winner's label attached to him because he was on two Memorial Cup champions with Windsor, but, you know, it's only his second year pro. Last year was his first. It was spent virtually entirely in the A. He did get one game at the end of the season to the Devs, and it was a slow start for him there, and he wound up scoring 25 goals. In talking to him, he always has been a guy who starts slow, whatever level he's been at, whether it's just he needs that time to get up to speed or he'd rather drink everything in and not make a mistake and then go, I don't know. But what we have started to see after making a team out of camp but then being sent down because he was tentative in his play, since his return, it's been a steady progress moving up. He's got decent wheels. He's got a pretty good shot. He's got a nose for the puck. He finds himself in front of the net. He's been driving there on occasion. He's coming off his first goal scored in the National Hockey League on Thursday. He's piled up some assists. Again, he's only played a handful of games, so you're not going to look at his number and go, wow. But lately, he's been putting up some points. He finally got on the scoreboard with the goal on Thursday, and they are very, very happy with his progress. Now, he is centering Zach Parise, and up until the injury, Ilya Kovalchuk. Tonight, it'll be David Clarkson on the right. So, again, an example of the injuries forcing a player a little sooner than perhaps the organization would like. But he's answered the call. As for some of the other youngsters, we talked about Larson. Matthias Tedenby is like a jitterbug, a water bug out there. I mean, he just flies all over the place. He's got to be better defensively than he's been because he's bounced around. He's got no numbers to speak of, but he's got a world of speed. He's only 21. So they're pretty high on him, but I think he's going to have to start to show something shortly. Josephson, we don't know. He suffered the injury early. But again, this is a team in transition. We start talking about youth, you know, 5 years ago, and prior to that, it was always this veteran Devils team you would talk about. And now the transition is finally occurring to some of the younger players. And so, you know, the Devils are keeping their fingers crossed on some of them, of course, because you never know how it will work out. But the Devils' future lies in those guys' hands.
Matt Lachlan does play-by-play for the New Jersey Devils on WFAN in New Jersey, giving us some insight into the Jets' opponent tonight. Of course, 6 o'clock, the puck drop, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290. Matt, thank you very much for joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Do you tweet?
I do not tweet. My kids tell me I've got to get a little more modern than I am, and so at some point that's probably in my future. But at this point, I am tweet-free, but that's probably to negative on my side.
We look forward to having you back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The one contingent is you got to be tweeting next time we have you on so we can promote your handle, all right?
That sounds fair enough. I'll make that deal with you, and I look forward to the next visit. And I'm looking forward to getting up to the Peg next month when we're in there for the first time. So it'll be good to be up there.
We wish you and the Devils a great season starting tomorrow.
Fair enough. Though.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, guys. Thanks very much.
Matt Lachlan, voice of the Devils, joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as we preview that game again. 6 o'clock, the puck drop here on Birchville Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. It is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, Michael Remus in for the guys who are at that game tonight. We'll catch up with them later. When we come back, we're going to look back at Thursday night's game, Jets beating the Islanders 3-0. A great game for the Jets, overcoming all those losses on the blue line. Pavlik with his first shout-out of the year. Evander Kane with the Gordie Howe hat trick and a great game overall by the team. We'll talk about that. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you're just joining us, Drew, Richard, and Ezra are on location. They are at tonight's Jets-Devils game in New Jersey. They were at the Islanders game on Thursday, and they'll be at the game in New York against the Rangers tomorrow, doing a little on-assignment trip for us here at Illegal Curve. As a result, the B team, the second line, the better-looking line, whatever you want to call us, Michael Remus, Dave Minuk, Matt Leibel in for you today. Still follow us, of course, at the website, www.illegalcurve.com. Tweet at us, at Illegal Curve. And, of course, with the game tonight, it is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. That Jets-Devils game starts at 6, and we've got hockey talk all the time leading up to that 6 o'clock start. Guys, we're gonna look back at that Jets-Islanders game from Thursday night. Our own Dennis Bayak from TSN 1290 caught up with Jets head coach Claude Noel and talked a lot about that game.
Coach, I guess let's start with an injury update as best you can from what happened last night and from what happened with Toby Enstrom the day before.
Yeah, well, Toby's still going to be a ways away. And then Antropov is day-to-day. We have to see tomorrow. Jones, we're not sure on Jones. It's not probable that he'll be in the game tomorrow. And then Stewart is day-to-day as well. We're not sure there either. We got to see tomorrow. There's a chance that's coming close there with him.
And then Hainsey.
Hainsey is kind of plateaued, so we're a little bit, not worried, but we're waiting to get over the hump on him because he still needs to practice with us, and he's not been able to yet, so that's coming close, but it's slow. I'm waiting for it to go.
And Mason?
Mason is, he tweaked a little bit the other day. You know, we got to get away from that because that's just puts everything back a little bit, so we're hoping maybe by Tuesday potentially. So that's where we're at with our injuries.
Did your plan for today's practice change with the injuries and the type of game it was last night?
Yeah, it changed because I kind of went down to three lines in the third period. It kind of reshuffled. It was a pretty hard game. We had some banged up guys, and the fact our schedule now is 10 days or 12 days or something we're walking into again with travel. So we've got 3 and 4 days. We're going to just have to manage the games. And what we've done today is we figured it would be best to pour everything into the games, try and continue to have our winning ways. And what we did is we end up with a teaching tape for about 7 minutes today, which I think was real good. We did some real good things in the game. We had a little lull in the second period we weren't very happy with. But I think that it's a learning stage for us, and it's a process, and I think we moved forward past it today.
What turned or what changed in the dressing room between the second and third? Because we basically saw two different teams from the second to the third period.
Well, I think that we recognized that we couldn't play that way. Certainly I recognized it and wasn't particularly happy, but you know, I think our group is mature enough and responsible enough to recognize that you're just playing Russian roulette. You're going to play like that. You know, we would like to win by design, not by accident. And if you keep going down the second period, you're going to win by accident. You can't put your goaltending under that kind of stress and duress and put them under fire like that. That's not the way winning teams play, and we have to start playing the right way. And we did do that, so which was really good for us because it showed us that our team is listening, and it shows us that we care about each other, and it shows us that we know how to win games and close out games. And I think that's what we proved to ourselves last night.
anything that you as coaches have discussed or can do to try and get Blake Wheeler going and Brian Little maybe try to get him on the scoreboard?
Well, yeah, I'm constantly watching that during games and watching that on tape as well to try to help players, because you're always trying to help players, and whether it's development or teaching, you're always trying to get them in a position where they have success. I think with them, they are having success. The fact that they're defending well, they're not scoring, and we're sometimes the best thing to do is not bring it up, because it's not like you don't think about it as a player. After a while, it's like you're tired of it. It wears you down. So I don't bring it up at all. I think it's a matter of time before it starts to happen. And you know, right now, you know, we've got to try to get Blake into probably more offensive situations. That's something that would help him. So I've got to try to, or we as coaches have to try to help that situation a bit. And he has to do his part in earning those minutes as well. And he's doing okay. You know, so I think that with Brian and Blake, those things will turn themselves into positive things. Because right now they're fairly dependable. They're dependable enough for us, and they're doing their part in helping us win games.
Safe to say that if there's going to be a call-up, Chevy and Zinger, I think, are both watching the Ice Caps tonight, that they would bring somebody back with them or send somebody back from there? If there's a call-up?
Yeah, if there would be a call-up, we'd have to get it in place soon, I think, because, yeah, they'd have to get it in soon. I don't know if it'd be post-game or before the game or what. We'd have to make a decision on that probably fairly soon, because you're coming into the weekend and you've got different scenarios you got to look at doing so.
Jets head coach Claude Noel speaking with our own Dennis Bayak. You can hear Dennis tonight with the play-by-play as the Jets take on the New Jersey Devils at 6 o'clock. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And further to that last comment about the call-up, since that interview yesterday, today the Jets calling up defenseman Paul Postma, their third defenseman they've called up this week from St. John's, with all the injuries on their blue line. Enstrom officially put on injured reserve with a broken collarbone. He'll be out at least 6 weeks. Randy Jones doubtful for tonight. Mark Stewart again doubtful for tonight. Already Derek Meach and Ron Hainsey are on IR themselves and are unavailable. So that's the situation with the Jets blue line. Guys, quickly about that Islanders game. Obviously Pavlik, 34 saves, the shutout. He's getting a lot of the credit, but the whole team, Bogosian led the way with 4 block shots, but a number of guys, from Slater blocking a shot with his stomach, it looked like. I mean, you could just feel that one through the TV back in Winnipeg when he just took that one on a penalty kill. Jones, of course, blocking it off his foot. The entire team stepped up, helped Pavlik. They didn't have a very good second period, but a few breaks went our way. Evander Kane really set the tone in the first period, finished with a Gordie Howe hat trick. Thoughts quickly on that Islanders game?
Yeah, you know, the Jets, it seemed like lately the Jets have been getting the breaks. I mean, you know, they get that early goal with Kane, you know, the puck is bouncing around. There's a few shifts, you know, each game with the opposition. You know, it doesn't look like it's a power play, but there's that shift in the Florida game, I think at the end of the second period, or was the first one Garrison scored. And then the Islanders game, they had a few shifts where they really took it to the Jets, but Pavlik stood on his head, kept somehow the puck stayed out. And the Jets were able to get some, you know, luck at the end when Johnny Oduya scored, you know, a tip-in from Andrew McDonald, you know, into his own net.
And Dave, I know you have been particularly impressed with Kane's play in that game, especially on his goal early on in the first period.
Yeah, there was a lot of individual effort, but more to Remus's point, the Jets were outshot 19-6 in that second period.
Oh, wow, yes.
You kept expecting it to break open. And the truth is, Pavlik played a fantastic game. I thought he was excellent. But they also got the benefit of a ton of bounces. I mean, they were talking about how, you know, it's not just about luck. There was a lot of luck because unlike the game in Florida where the puck bounced off of Byfuglien and went to Fleischman and he scored the go-ahead goal, in this instance, you had bounces that if they just went an inch here, an inch there, it's an open net, it's a tap-in net, and the pucks weren't going. So the Jets had a lot of fortuitous bounces and the Islanders didn't. So there was, Pavlik, I thought, played a great game, but I thought the Jets also, and I didn't expect it, but the Jets got a lot of good bounces. Because there were a lot of times where a rebound was, you know, there was a like kind of a lazy rebound or a fat rebound, and if a guy's there, the guy's playing, you know, if you're playing a stronger team, there's a good chance that those goals are going in, but they didn't, and the Jets played well.
You're absolutely right, Dave. I mean, there's no question Pavlik, he's continued, ever since that Philly game, he's had 3 really strong games in a row, the 1-0 game against the Lightning, of course, the shootout victory over Florida, and then his first shutout of the season, 7th of his career, 34 saves. Pavlik stole the show. He's always a very modest guy. heard his interview, gives nothing but credit to the rest of his players. Obviously, the guy's blocking shots. It was a great game, and he'll get the start tonight, and hopefully some of those bounces will continue to go the Jets' way. Jets-Devils tonight at 6 on TSN 1290. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day with Jets coverage every minute of every hour leading up to that 6 o'clock puck drop. We're with you for another 2 hours here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matt Leibel, Michael Remus, and Dave Minuk in for the guys, the B team, TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back. Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, Michael Remus. Mike or Michael?
Whatever you want, Matt. You're the host. Whatever sounds good to you.
Toby Remus. I got in trouble this week because I kept calling him Tobias, and it pointed out to me by a number of guys that he prefers to be called Toby, so I'm calling everybody Toby. Toby Minuk, Toby Remus, and Toby Leibel with you for this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Richard, and Ezra are in New Jersey for the Jets-Devils game tonight at 6. You catch all the action here on TSN 1290 because it is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. The Jets are 5-6-1. They're 3-1 in the first four games of their seven-game road trip, their longest road trip of the season. They're having a great second half of the first month of the season. Does that make sense? Yeah, kind of. They've really turned it around after a bit of a slow start. Really, you can't blame the guys. There's a lot of pressure starting the season at home. This is, in my opinion, the most anticipated team season in the history of the NHL. And obviously, you can't blame a guy where the average age of the guy is like 25 on the team for having, you know, a little bit of nerves, but they've gotten on the road. They seem to have bonded. Their goaltender is playing outstanding. They're having a great game. We're going to talk a little bit more now about this Islanders game from Thursday night. If you're just joining us, you can catch the first hour of the show on podcast, iTunes. Check us out online, www.illegalcurve.com. Tweet at us, @IllegalCurve. And, of course, the entire show will be available for download to your phone, to your iTunes, on iTunes Music Store. Just search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Dave, Michael, let's talk a little bit more about this Islanders game. How about the fact that I think with the Illegal Curve guys and their friends in attendance, they made up half of the people at the game in Uniondale. Maybe 30 people there.
No, I mean, the announced crowd, the official attendance as written by the NHL.com says 10,157. But, I mean, they were just... I'm not trying to diminish the Florida fans, but like I felt like I was watching a game in Florida, not in New York. And, like, the tradition of the Islanders, you can just see it. And it's interesting because the Jets were there, there was so much more coverage. So we saw, like, interviews. Like, Newsday was doing an interview with fans, and they were talking about, like, what are all the problems. And if you're not paying attention, because especially now that everybody pays attention solely to the Jets, you become somewhat of a specialist and a lot less of a generalist, you don't really know exactly what's going on with some of the teams. You know the Islanders are having problems, but you're not really sure. And then you're actually listening to the people being interviewed and talking about the arena, talking about the limitations, talking about the ownership. And so these teams are like it pains me to watch a team like that has such a rich tradition, four Stanley Cups in the early 80s, to now be talked about like a relocation team. Now, I personally don't think the Islanders are going anywhere farther than Brooklyn. Like, I don't even think they're going to leave Long Island, but the reality is that I don't think they're going to leave the New York area. So, you know, using Kansas City is much like the way Mary Lemieux and the Pittsburgh Penguins use the Jets. You know, like talking about, oh, we're going to, I mean, not to say that they use the Jets so much, but, you know, like they put it out there. Oh, we're going to talk to Winnipeg. Oh, we're going to talk to Kansas. Similarly, you got the Islanders doing that sort of thing. So it's riled up the fans. But the problem is, like, there's been such a battle between Charles Wang and the community trying to redevelop, trying to get the community to have an influx of cash. So he doesn't have to output it because he's already put out a lot of money. Of course, they've still got Yashin on the books, so maybe there's a reason why the Islanders don't have any money right
Yashin,
now.
Yashin, DiPietro. I think they're still paying Brian Trottier.
So the point is that, you know, like, it's unfortunate because you see a rich tradition team like the Islanders with 10,000 people in the stands, and you're thinking to yourself, what's going on? Like, why are there so many empty seats? Because the truth is the real hardcore fans are there right now. The hardcore 10,000 people that are going to, you know, those are your dedicated fans, regardless of whether there were in actuality 10,000 people. There might have only been 6 or 7, you know. But the point is that those are the hardcore dedicated fans. And the truth is, actually, what's interesting is if there is a new arena built, similar to what's happening in Winnipeg, those 10,000 are going to have to do what Winnipeggers have done and really band together, because then, you know, the prices of tickets are going to go up. It's going to become a lot more corporate. It's going to become a lot less of a fan. You know, you're not going to have as many fans in the stand. I'm not saying corporate people can't be fans, but you know what I'm saying? Like, the point is that it becomes a lot more expensive. So you're going to lose those 10,000 people that are going consistently. So even though it looks like a low attendance, which it is, you're going to lose those people, right? Now,
the reality is they need to make money, so they're not going to care as much because they want to have a new building so they can do similar to what the Jets are doing, in that they're making, you know, they're availing themselves of all opportunities.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, Matt Leibel with Dave Minuk and Michael Remus talking about the Jets Islanders and the attendance woes in Uniondale.
You know, it's not so much Uniondale. I mean, you look at what happened in Florida, like, yeah, it was Halloween and maybe people want to do trick-or-treating, but they were giving away tickets, you know, for $4 or $10, you know. It's almost laughable here for us where, you know, the lowest price is, you know, $100 or the average price, whatever. People who want to see a game here can't go. In other cities like that, they're giving it away. And I think even in Dallas, who's had public ownership issues lately, they didn't get such a good crowd at last night's game, which is, you know, on a Friday night. So we might see, you know, a few more teams coming up to places where really love and appreciate hockey.
And to that point, Dallas is one of those rare southern markets that has been doing well for several years with their attendance. I mean, they getting to the Cup, winning the Cup, they've been able to grow a fan base, unlike Florida. You know, I know Florida got to the Cup in whatever it was, 96, actually the last Jets here, right? Florida got to the Cup, lost to Colorado. But they have trouble. They've always kind of had trouble drawing. I know New York, the Islanders, have been having trouble for years. It's kind of scary to see Dallas, in my opinion, with the woes like they've had this season.
You know, we always joke about it's like, oh, people don't want to go to the games because they don't have an owner. But when you see what's happened in Tampa Bay, and we talked about this a lot last week with Jeff Vinnick taking over the Tampa Bay Lightning, how improved, you know, their attendance has been, how much more passion they put into their promoting their product, and just, you know, the Lightning are now, you know, when you put a good product out there, people are on the upswing, and people are going to go and see it.
Yeah, now the interesting thing, back to the Islanders for a second, it's not like they don't have young talent. You could make a case they have one of the best rising stars in the game in Tavares. Michael Grabner, a former Manitoba Moose player, had a great rookie season, 34 goals last year. He kind of had a slow start, but they've got young talent there. They've got guys to get excited about. Obviously, you mentioned they've got a few killer contracts. I think they are still paying Alexei Yashin. They've got DiPietro signed up for the afterlife. So the Islanders having a few woes, but I mean, there are reasons why you could be an Islanders fan, and to your point, David, is very disappointing to see. I mean, the Islanders won 4 consecutive Stanley Cups, and that was the 80s. Like, we're not talking about, like, so long ago. And the 80s aren't that... Are they that far ago? You were alive, Dave, when Islanders won Stanley Cups. So you're not that old.
No, I was aware of the Islanders winning this. I was more of an Oilers, Flames, you know, late 80s Smythe Division guy. But, yeah, no, of course I was aware of the Islanders championships. But that's what I'm saying. You're right. It's not that far along. It's not that far, you know, ago. And so you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, how did this team go from that to where they are presently? And they're still playing in like a 60-year-old building. So the point is that, like, they need to upgrade. And the problem is they need to have either a change in ownership. I mean, Wang clearly cares about the team. I mean, I'm not saying he unfortunately seems to be a little bit too much of a meddling owner. But the point is that there needs to be some sort of radical change, because the reality is that right now, whatever the Islanders are doing, it's not helping them out. And the team is suffering. I mean, I'm looking their numbers right now. They're averaging 12,000, almost 300 fans a game, which puts them just ahead of Dallas and Phoenix. You know, and I mean, and the fact is, I mean, look at Dallas. Dallas is averaging 10,000 fans a game. Dallas, I mean, like, sure, they weren't expected to be, you know, very good, and that, you know, they traded away one of their stars.
They're 9-3.
No, but I'm saying, they traded away Brad Richards. You're not expecting this team to be, like, you know, where they are right now. It's similar to what happened to Colorado a few years ago with you know, when they brought Duchene in, and they thought nobody, I mean, I remember, who's the beat writer for the Colorado?
Adrian Dater.
Wrote a scathing piece basically saying that, you know, castigating the fans and saying to them, you know, you're
what
showing...
What was that word?
Castigating?
Okay, sure, go on.
Okay. But the point is that he basically said, like, you're showing no loyalty. You're only showing loyalty when the team wins, and that's not a loyal fan base. And so which he's obviously trying to get at is you have to show support regardless. As long as you can see that the team is doing something, like, you don't want to be, you know, a blind fan and say, okay, here's my $5,000 or $10,000 a year, and I'm going to come watch crap, because nobody wants to pay to watch that. But if you know, like, Oilers fans have done. Look at Oilers fans. They knew for the last few years their team was going to be terrible because the, you know, management had a vision. They said, okay, we're not planning for next year. We're planning for 5 years. And so that's what you have to do. And if you can buy into that system as a fan,
And you can sell that to your fans. You'll get them to come out. But like I said, I mean, Dallas, it's unbelievable because I don't think anybody expected them to do, you know, did you really expect them to be where they are? No, of course not.
First in the West? Maybe not.
Yeah.
Unlikely.
Well, not first, but they're close.
Right. Well, to your point, though, it's to me, it's important for the league to get a franchise like the Islanders. The Islanders are not like Florida in the sense that if Florida had to relocate, I don't know that it's not better for the league. I don't know that it's not better for hockey in general, but the Islanders, with the history they've had with the Stanley Cup banners, and we saw them hanging there when the number of all-stars and legendary Hall of Famers who have played for that organization, I think we all, as hockey fans, want to see the Islanders get back. And we do want to see their fans support, but it would be nice maybe to see, like you're saying, some unwavering support. Like, we know we're going to get in Winnipeg or in Edmonton or those things. What about the support in Buffalo? What are the crowds like that, like in Buffalo? Do you guys know?
Oh, I think Buffalo. They're, you know, Buffalo is a town that loves their sports. I mean, they got the Bills. They got the Sabres. Those fans, you know, they'll come out and they'll cheer and make a lot of noise. You know how it is over there.
And the Jets are in Buffalo on Tuesday night, I believe, for the final game of their 7-game road trip. They've got the Devils tonight, the Rangers tomorrow, and then the Sabres on Tuesday, correct?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk with Mike Harrington of the, he's a beat writer.
Buffalo News.
Writes for the Buffalo News, covers the Sabres. You guys like that segue there? You see how I did that there?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. It was great.
They taught us that.
Surprised me there.
Getting the claps from producer Rack.
Oh,
I can relax now. Dave Minuk, Mike Remus, Matt Leibel in the house tonight. We're going to come back and talk with Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News about the Sabres. Preview that game on Tuesday as the Jets close out their road trip. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but it is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290 with the Jets playing the Devils tonight in New Jersey. Puck dropping that one at 6. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Coming back with Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Welcome back. The voice is right. It is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290. You got the Jets and New Jersey Devils tonight. That game starts at 6. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you're just tuning in, the first thing you should know, if you would like to hear the parts of the show you missed, check out Illegal Curve Hockey Show in the iTunes Music Store and download the podcast. In fact, while you're there, sign up to get it downloaded to you every time we have a show. And if you're wondering where Drew, Richard, and Ezra are, well, we decided to give you listeners a break. Get some real talent in here. Much like the Jets' second line has overtaken and been stronger this year, the second line of this show, just waiting for the opportunity to get in front of the mics. And here we are, guys. I'm Matt Leibel, along with Michael Remus and Dave Minuk. Guys, it's been a pleasure. We have now on the phone with us to look ahead to the Jets game Tuesday night in Buffalo from the Buffalo News, Sabres beat writer Mike Harrington. Mike, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you today?
Very good, Matt, David, Michael. Always a pleasure to talk to the checking line. They're just as important. Don't ever downgrade their significance.
Well, we were saying at the top of the show that the Jets' second line has really been carrying all the scoring, all of the momentum this season, and we would like to carry that tradition on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on again. I've been on in the past and previous seasons, and it must be awesome for you guys to be able to talk about your own team. I mean, I always loved going to Atlanta as a city, but as a hockey town, no way. And I'm certainly looking forward to that first trip to Winnipeg in January. Yes, I said I'm looking forward to going to Winnipeg in January. How about that?
You know what? It's 10 degrees here today. That's Celsius. I don't know if you can do a quick conversion, but it's hot. As far as Winnipeg November is concerned, Mike, it is very hot right now in Winnipeg. So you never know. There might not be snow here when you get here.
You never know. I'm figuring in the middle of January I'll have a problem, but it's just a good thing for the league to get back to a place like Winnipeg that loves hockey, and people in places like Buffalo that love hockey are really happy to hear about it.
Mike, we'd love to continue talking about the weather, but why not a little bit of hockey? Can you give us an injury update on Tyler Ennis?
Ennis has a high ankle sprain. He's doing some work. He's still week to week at this point, and, you know, the Sabres miss Ennis. Certainly, Jochen Hesch is still... No one knows what's up with him with a concussion. But other than that, so far, first month of the season, they've been pretty healthy, which is pretty fortunate for them.
So that leads into my question, which is, who has surprised you so far this season?
Well, I mean, you know, the surprise in the negative way is Ville Leino coming off the big free agent contract really hasn't lived anywhere near to it yet, but they had a great game last night against Calgary, I thought. You know, and from the positive standpoint, certainly the big talk is Jonas Enroth, the rookie goaltender, backing up Miller and just playing terrific hockey, really came within a pinball shot of a shutout last night against the Flames, and we have a brewing maybe goaltending controversy here. I don't subscribe to the theory, but a lot of fans are really pretty hip to what Enroth has been able to do so far.
So have there been any other, I guess that the other side of the coin is who has been the biggest disappointment? I mean, you mentioned one or two. Has there been anybody else? Or?
Yeah, I mean, Leno's been a big issue, but I mean, I do think Leno's going to come around. It's just a question of adjustment. You know, Marc-Andre Grignani had a great playoff run last year. Has not really been able to get things going this year offensively, has not been able to get the power play going, and that's an issue. Derek Roy and Drew Stafford have struggled, although they both got on the board last night. Roy's still dealing with a hamstring, so there's issues there. He's only had one goal to this point. It's a team that's still a little top-heavy. Thomas Vanek, Jason Pominville, and Luke Adam have been doing really too much of the scoring. They need to find some scoring in other places.
You know, the Sabres, you know, signed Christian Ehrhoff in the offseason to that massive 10-year, $40 million contract. You know, how has he looked so far this year?
Well, he's going to have to start playing like a $40 million defenseman. I mean, it's a top-heavy contract. He's making $10 million this year. He's a top-paying defenseman in the NHL. He really needs to start playing like it. He has one goal so far. That was an empty netter. He's minus six. Has not really impacted the power play very much. It's hard for free agents to live up to these outrageous contracts. Everyone overpays, and I think Ehrhoff and Ville Leino are really two classic examples of it. Can they possibly live up to that kind of money? So far, the answer is no. The three newcomers so far, clearly the best and most well-adjusted has been Robin Regier, who is the trade addition from Calgary. So the Ehrhoff-Leino signings, the jury's going to remain out, but they're here for a lot of years, so they're going to have to figure things out eventually.
So at this point in the season, does this look like a Lindy Ruff-style team?
Yeah, you know, Lindy likes his system. Lindy likes players to be responsible in their own zone. And, you know, I think that's one of the issues Leno's having. Leno's used to a lot more freelancing. The first exhibition game, him and Ennis and Stafford were passing the puck all over. Lindy called it the Harlem Globetrotters display. Never really put any pucks on the net. And that's a negative to Lindy, and he regrets not reining that in, he said to us this week. They're a baffling kind of team. They've been terrific on the road. They're in Ottawa tonight, and we'll see how it goes. They've really struggled at home. You know, they've only beaten Columbus and Calgary in their home rink so far, so that's something they have to turn around, but that was the pattern they had last year, too, and they did turn that around in the second half of the season.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Matt Leibel, Michael Remus, Dave Minuk in for the guys. Our guest is Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News. Mike, maybe they're not playing like it so far, but would you say that you expect the Sabres to be the best team in their division this year?
I would expect it. Clearly, they're not playing like it right now. Clearly, as we sit here the first week of November, the Leafs are the best team in the Northeast Division, and I don't think anyone would have said that at any point in recent months. The Bruins have been a complete train wreck. Ottawa's been better than we thought. Montreal's a little up and down. You would think the Sabres, by the end of the thing, would be the best team in this division, but they need to get some better scoring. They need to get some more consistent goaltending, and they need to fix their power play. And until they do those things, and if the Leafs continue to stay as hot as they are, the Leafs are going to be the team to beat, believe it or not.
You know, earlier this week, Patrick Coletta was suspended 4 games for headbutting Jakub Voracek. Has this been a distraction to the team?
No, I don't think it's a distraction. I think they were surprised at the severity of it, but, I thought Brendan Shanahan did a good job in his video. There was no penalty on the headbutt at all. No one even noticed it during the game, and Voracek apparently told the Flyers writers he didn't even know he got hit with a head. When you saw the video, you said, oh, that's probably suspendable. And then Brendan Shanahan, in his own video, showing two previous incidents of headbutting involving Coletta, and then you kind of understand where he got 4 games from. This is kind of a repeat offense. And Coletta's working to change his style to come in conform with the new rules, but that's something he's going to have to work on some more. You can't use your head as a battering ram 3 times in a little more than a year. You're going to pay the price for that.
Shanahan came and spoke to the Jets players, you know, personally. How have the players, in Buffalo reacted to Shanahan's disciplinary actions?
Well, you know, the biggest thing they've had is, you know, there wasn't a lot of complaints I heard about the Colettas, but Paul Gostad got plummeted in the back into the boards in the preseason against Toronto, and there was nothing. I think that was Colby Armstrong, and Jordan Leopold took another plummeting in the back in a recent game a couple weeks back against Florida. Again, nothing. So there's a little confusion, and I think that's safe to say most teams in the league. They're confused. What is a penalty? What is a suspension? What isn't? how is the Daniel Alfredson play not a suspension? Is that incidental contact? I mean, I'm confused. And then you have, you know, the Wisniewski hit in preseason gets 8 games. So I think Shanahan's trying to establish new rules, but there's some inconsistencies here that have players and media members alike, you know, kind of confused of where the league is coming from with all this stuff.
So, Mike, right now, previous to the season beginning, everybody was talking about, surprisingly, the Buffalo Sabres, how they were suddenly the big spenders. Terry Pegula was, you know, coming into the community. He was delivering tickets personally. What's the buzz in Buffalo right now about this team? Is there an expectation now that this team is ready to take that next step, and instead of just challenging for the first round of the playoffs, maybe the second round, that they could actually do something significant?
They're talking Stanley Cup. They have been talking Stanley Cup since the summer. When you go in the arena and they play their introductory video, it ends with the voice of Terry Pegula saying the reason for the Sabres' existence is to win the Stanley Cup. They went out and spent a lot of money on free agents, really for the first time. They expect to win. They expect to be playing hockey deep into the playoffs. They have 21 sets of back-to-backs, and that's why Ryan Miller gets conserved a lot and doesn't play back-to-backs. They think they can and should be playing hockey deep into May. And a first-round knockout again is not going to be acceptable. So this is a team that's going to look very hard as the season goes along at some of its needs and maybe have to make a move at the deadline. But this is a team that expects to win and go deep in the playoffs. I don't know if they can, but that's their expectation and their goal here. They're not trying to win a first-round series, which I point out to people they have not done since 2007.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, Mike Remus, your host right now. We are chatting with Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. You know, of course, with the Bills playing so well, Mike, too, it's also setting up this, atmosphere in your city for expecting success and wanting to kind of ride the momentum. I know we have a similar thing in Winnipeg with our CFL team, the Bombers, who are playing their last regular season game today, having a very strong season. I think they and the Jets are just feeding off each other. And I'm sure that's happening in Buffalo as well.
It is. I think what we're seeing here is the 2005-06 Sabres were a great surprise. They got all the way to Game 7 of the conference final against Carolina when all the defense injuries caught up to them and lost. And a lot of people to this day think they would have won the Stanley Cup if they won Game 7. They would have beaten the Edmonton Oilers. And the Bills of this year are kind of like that as well. They're completely out of the blue, a complete surprise to be a contender. And this year's Sabres are more like 06-07 when they lost to Ottawa in the final. There's more of a sense of communal dread, I think, when they don't play well, because there's a large degree of expectation that's been thrust upon this club, and a lot of it's driven in the salaries. I mean, you're talking a payroll in the $63, $64 million range. That's not built to sneak by seventh in the conference and get through the first round. And I think the Bills are really the talk of the town in terms of being enjoyed, and the Sabres right now, people are kind of gnashing their teeth as to what's wrong, and you try to, you know, remind them and remind yourself as a media member, it's November, and you can't have the football mentality of every game is so important, but it is hard when there was so much build-up to this season.
Mike, we'll let you go on this question. At the beginning of our interview with you, you mentioned that you don't believe there's a goaltender controversy with the Sabres, but I want to ask you about that. I mean, Ryan Miller, obviously a great track record, not a great season last year. Of course, there were injuries. He gets pulled against the Flyers last game, before last night's game, after giving up 3 goals on just 11 shots last just over 6 minutes. And then you got Enroth with a great game last night against the Flames, 2-1 victory, 29 saves. You sure there's no goaltender controversy?
There's no goaltender controversy yet, and I emphasize the yet. I mean, it's going to really, really blow up, I think, if Miller blows up tonight in Ottawa. He needs to have a good game. He started out terrific this year. He was 4-1 in his first five. His goals against was 161. His save percentage was .950. He's lost 4 in a row. The goals against is .391 in those games. The save percentage is in the .870 range. So he's in quite a slump right now that he's got to dig himself out of. His body language hasn't been good. You know, he's been a little frustrated with the media. He's frustrated in general right now with the fans, I think. He needs to snap out of it quick before there is a goaltending controversy here. There can't be when you have a $6 million goalie and the other one's a kid like Enroth, but the play on the ice is going to determine things, and right now, Miller has not been getting the job done the last 4 games. He needs a quick turnaround here. And, you know, the Senators, the Jets are coming in Tuesday. The Jets are going to be in the last game of a long road trip. You know, so Miller needs to get things turned around quickly here, or the controversy is really going to blow up.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Mike, are you on Twitter?
BN Harrington.
At BN Harrington. Thank you very much. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo
News.
Thanks,
Mike.
Thanks very much, gentlemen. Take care.
We have him on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Minuk, Michael Remus, and Matt Leibel. In for Drew Richardneser, who are in New Jersey for tonight's Jets-Devils game, which you can catch right here on TSN 1290. It is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day, and the puck drop between the Jets and Devils is at 6. We're going to come back and preview tonight's game between the Jets and Devils. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.